Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock.
Hi, friends. Chris Things here. Chris Things Brian, your host of this little old Wrestling Art with Chris Things podcast of ours. Thanks for stopping by. You've made it to our Match of the Week edition. That being the one where we have a little chatsy about the match that was my favourite thing that I watched that particular week. You know, doesn't necessarily end up being a current match all the time. It's just what I happen to watch. Sometimes it's a match from the 80s, the 90s, you name it. But this week we are a bit more current. This week being a tremendous match back on the American Dragon Bryan Danielson Match of the Week series that it's known to have become. Thanks for that one, Bradley. This being a match between two of my longtime favorites, that being the American Dragon and Katsuyori Shibata. Man, just such a delightful match, a dream match, just everything that is professional wrestling to me. I'll get into that one a little bit later, being joined with friend of the show, young boy Josh Smith, who you may know, fellow Social Suplex podcaster with the Rad As Keeping It Strong Style podcast. Man, very excited to chat with Josh all about that one. So let's just leave that one till a little bit later. For now, we've got a little old what's going on in the world of Chris Things intro monologue, where, you know, I talk a little bit about my art life, what I've got going on, what I've been doing the past week. Man, last week was just a crazy one. You know, I spoke a little bit about the launch of the awesome video plant concept that a dear friend and client of mine, Richard, has launched. So excited about that. And it's so much cool stuff already up there. Again, if you haven't already had the opportunity to do so, I highly recommend checking out Video Plant on Instagram. So that is video.plant. on Instagram. Make sure you check that one out. But I am stoked to officially announce for you guys that this next episode coming up, we've got the Wrestling Art Curator edition of the show coming back, And I'm doing something a little bit different again, you know, talking about creatives in the wrestling art space. I'm actually going to have Richard of the Video Plot on this coming week to talk all about this amazing project, this basement passion project, all things, you know, the passion and nostalgia for the video stores of yesteryear and cult cinema, but also relevant to this show, just an incredible wrestling VHS collection, and also I guess him playing wrestling art curator in a sense, with the curation of a lot of rad you know, art kind of projects that are all part of the video plant. So I think that'll be an interesting one. Looking forward to that. Can't wait to have Richard on the show. So we also had the launch of the you know, the Sandman podcast with the artwork launched. I spoke a little bit about that last week, but I was just delighted to see the really you know, positive reaction to the artwork. A lot of lovely compliments, and yeah, you know, big time Sandman fan. So that really tickled me there. But other than that, continuing along with some of the commission work that I really live for. So got a few more things in the works there. Can't wait to share with you. And I haven't been talking as much, but we've been continuing on our march to the new Way of the Blade book, the AEW edition. I'm not sure exactly on time frame of the release of that, but hopefully that's coming up soon. So I'm just going to keep on posting a new artwork or illustration from the original book until whenever such time is that the new one comes out, because it's been a fun kind of deal. Gone down memory lane, you know, looking at some of these illustrations that I did for the original Way of the Blade book, collection of 100 of the greatest bloody wrestling matches in professional wrestling history, as chosen by the amazing Phil Schneider. So a few that we've had that I don't think I've spoken about here yet was the fantastic Flair versus Ted DiBiase match from Mid-South Wrestling, you know, Bill Watts' territory, back in 85. One of the greatest episodes of wrestling television ever, with the whole beatdown of DiBiase face turn, and the Captain Redneck Dick Murdoch just beats the shit out of him, and then he's fighting back from underneath the whole, man, such a tremendous match. And I was really happy with the illustration too, in sort of being able to capture in one image that whole kind of story. I guess that's something that I've come to really like as a illustrator, trying to tell a story with these kind of illustrations, or capture a story, I guess. And yeah, I really quite liked that one, in that obviously we, you know, see the old Crimson Mask on Ted DiBiase, but you know, obviously also Captain Redneck laying the boots in him, and Flair just looking so smug in the ring. But you know, I really, you know, I was quite delighted of being able to try to, you know, draw Flair and the you know, classic NWA World Heavyweight Championship around his waist as well. So I was quite happy with that came out. If you'd like to have a little sticky pic of that, as always, at Chris Things on the Instagram. You can also check it out on my website, christhings.com.au, where you'll be able to also, if you are in the mood for such a thing, be able to buy a print of it. Yeah, you can get yourself an art print, you know, whether it's a one as low as $25 dues, or, you know, even the up to the fancier ones that I get printed up here on fancy, thick, decadent art paper, and then I send out to you, myself, including a little handwritten thank you note, maybe a little bonus in there for you, perhaps a zine. That was a super fun one. We've also had a few others, including, man, I think, at least for me, the greatest Lucha Libre Apuestas mask versus mask match that I've ever seen between Atlantis and Viano Tercera. I don't even know where to begin with that. It's so great. One match of the year for the year 2000, for the Wrestling Observer Award, somehow did not get the magical 5 stars. It used to be really hard to get 5 stars from Dave Meltzer back then. Seems to have gotten a little bit more easy as time has gone on, but just, I don't even need to say anything else. Just please, if you have any interest in Lucha Libre and especially in the sort of bloody variety of these mask versus mask matches, and also some of the very best wrestling you'll ever see in your life, please check that one out. Do yourself a favor. And then the last one that'll bring us up to date that I just posted yesterday is another match that was so close to my heart. Jushin Liger against his career best opponent, in my opinion, Naoki Sano, dude that he started his career out wrestling against as a young lion, all the way up to his end, Sano's retirement match at the Tokyo Dome. Their feud in the late 80s, early 90s was some of the best stuff you'll ever see, especially like for junior heavyweight wrestling in New Japan, which, you know, I guess was more about a lot of the flashy, impressive wrestling kind of stuff. Getting back to obviously the greatest, potentially greatest junior heavyweight of all time in the original Tiger Mask, Satoru Sayama. But this one, just the heated violence, the blood, the, you know, Sano tearing open the mask and it just flopping off while Liger is just bleeding a gusher. Just tremendous, tremendous stuff. All of their matches are great. You know, I highly recommend you check out the whole series of their singles matches from 89 through 90. But this one in particular was yeah, in January 31st, 1990, heck of a match, man. I really, from going through these, from flipping through the Way of the Blade book, it really got me, you know, I don't know, it's a weird mix of nostalgia, but just such a fun project to do, and I'm so, just feel delighted that I got to do that. That I got to illustrate that book, that, you know, hopefully more book illustration things on the way. But if there's anything in that original Way of the Blade book that, if you happen to own that one, or you have any favorite illustrations of your own that you think, hey, I'd like to have that on my wall, well, bloody old, if it's not already up on my website, swing me a message. I can arrange that for you. We'll get that done. So hit me up, but all right, I think that's about it for our what's going on in the world of Chris things. We're all caught up now on our Way of the Blade look backs, I'm kind of excited for the future, whatever that may hold. All right, well, over to our match of the week. Here we go. I have a young boy, Josh Smith, on the line to talk about a match that I loved oh so much. Bryan Danielson versus Katsuyori Shibata. Welcome to the show, dude.
Hey, Chris. Long time no chat. Glad to be back. Excited to talk about this match.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. I was mentioning to you, when I was thinking of all the people that I could talk to about this match, I felt like even though Shibata no longer officially affiliated still kind of has the, you know, New Japan guy deal. So kind of in your wheelhouse, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny enough, I hadn't even seen this match until you requested that we watch it, just because I myself am not a Collider.
Oh, shit. It's funny you say that. There was a time where I was one of those ride or die Collision guys. I still will, you know, tune in when there's something that, like, awesome happening like this. But there's just so much wrestling these days, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it wasn't even for me so much a CM Punk or FTR thing. It was more so just I don't watch wrestling on Saturday nights, like. I got a life.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, we're lucky in Australia that it airs on, Sunday morning, Sunday midday. So it actually works out pretty good, you know, because I'm normally doing stuff on a Saturday night as well. And then, like, you know, what are you doing on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, other than being hungover?
Yeah, absolutely. But this was a match that I had on my to-do list. It was one of those that's like, oh, I heard great things. I need to catch up. Like, it's right up my alley. Just hadn't got around to it. And then you asked me last night, you're like, hey, you know, super last minute, but can you jump on? And I was like, all right, let me scratch this off my list so I can jump on the show and talk about amazing art, catch up with my friend Chris.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And it always makes me quite happy when you know, this thing results in people, you know, either watching a match they've been meaning to for a while, or, you know, being exposed to something, especially some of those more retro matches that they might have never seen before. So, no, I think it's a pretty cool thing. And man, for this one especially, like, this is a special one for me because I, you know, big time Shibata fan. You know, I think I've watched pretty much all of his Big Mouth Loud stuff. All of his journey matches into Noah back in the day, all those, like, amazing matches with, like, Fujita and Murakami, like all of those bastions of Enokiism from back in the first New Japan run. And then, you know, I mean, we can get into this more later, but obviously him coming back from just insane you know, brain injury,
right?
It's just a wild story that and it's such a treat that we actually still get to watch Shibata wrestle, you know.
Yeah, I think that there's an art idea where you do Shibata with his brain removed.
I was gonna mention, I mean, not many people have actually been on the surgery table and had their head split open and the brain actually popped out. Then I guess they gave it a bit of a scrub over and then put it back in. But man, watch.
I think there's gotta be like a horror themed commission, something kitschy with like a Frankenstein theme, where he's got like the bolts in his head, something like that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking definitely like Reanimator kind of vibes.
Oh, man. I just saw Reanimator for the first time like a year and a half ago.
Oh, shit.
And like, I want to say easily my best horror movie of 85, but Return of the Living Dead is also up there too. And they're in the same year. And that's a tough call. And they're both amazing, though.
Dude, I love both of those movies so much. Officially, though, Return of the Living Dead has got to be one of my all-time favorites. It's one of those, like, you have to keep going. I normally try to watch it about once a year or once every couple of years. You just keep getting more and more out of it. But, I mean, talk about one of the all-time great, you know, cult movies, combining, you know, comedy elements with just great thriller horror stuff and awesome soundtrack, dialogue.
See, that movie made me fall in love with the cramps, but I hadn't seen the first movie first. I saw like the third one
from
the 90s, which is okay, but it's not great. And so I was just like, oh, these are just joke movies. And then, you know, last year I got around to watching it and I was like, oh my God, what I've been missing out on this. I'm such an idiot.
Hey, man, that's the good thing about this stuff. Like, even if you get to it late at the party, you're just like, what? It's almost even better.
Right.
Yeah, but I adore that movie. But yes, man, the whole Meltzer reporting of Shibata having his brain taken out of his head and put back in, I'm like, how does that happen? Like, I just enjoyed that whole thing. There's no part of me that was just, you know, one of these Dave haters. You know, I love Dave, but, you know, I guess something got lost in translation along the lines of...
You got to speak Dave. If you speak Dave, you know what's going on. If you don't speak Dave, then, you know, that's on you.
I assume he just got the report from Osprey, because I'm quite sure that's something Osprey would probably believe.
He's like, they took his brain out of his head, bruv.
Yeah, that's definitely what happened. But, I mean, yeah, then this match as well, the other real special part of it was obviously Danielson being on the shelf, career thought to be ended as well, with, you know, concussion issues too. So, I mean, both of these guys, and then, you know, that's quite close to home for me, because that, you know, ultimately is the reason why, you know, I stopped wrestling, because I had a concussion doctor tell me I'd got hit in the head too many times, and I really shouldn't be doing that anymore. So, I don't know, getting to see two guys like that, I mean, there's fucking, right. let me tell you, there's no part of it that I see that and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll put those boots on again, but it's just, it's just super cool to see, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and it goes even beyond that. I mean, of course, both of these guys did have, you know, their struggles when it came to brain protocol and injury and everything like that, but, you know, for years and years, they were just, you know, completely separate worlds. You had Shibata either in MMA or Big Mouth Loud, and then he was in New Japan and everything like that. And it just never felt like Daniel Bryan from WWE was ever going to get to mix it up with a guy like Shibata as many times as he might have said he wanted to in interviews. It was like, this is never going to happen. And then, you know, at both of them being out at different times, like the stars had to align perfectly for this match to happen, and like, thank God it finally did.
Yeah, absolutely. And in like fucking Ontario of all places.
Yeah, it's not quite the Tokyo Dome, but you know, it'll do.
Hey, I mean, that being said, and this is can be said for a lot of these like awesome Danielson final full-time run dream matches that he's had, a lot of them are in like, you know, the most, you know, absurd or, you know, last place that you'd expect to see it.
Right.
But the crowds have always, like, brought it, you know, regardless of whether it's in, you know, New Orleans or in, like, I can't even remember where the Nagata one was. I think, was that in, somewhere in Florida? I'm not sure. But then at this
one... I don't
one,
think so, because I wasn't there.
Right, yeah, that's true. But, I mean... It just goes to show, and I think this is a callback and a real compliment to the AEW fans in a similar vein to the WCW fans from back in the day, where, you know, they can be sit through whatever absurd talking segment or trashy bullshit that's part of the show, but you put great wrestling on and they'll be right there for it, and they'll like react to it and make it even better, you know, same way as those WCW fans when they'd be sitting through all that bullshit and then they'd get to see like Hoovy and Blitzkrieg.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
noticed...
Slightly different match to Hoovy and Blitzkrieg.
I noticed when this match started, obviously there's the dream match element that you touched on, and so the crowd, like right from the get-go, they're like, holy shit, holy shit. But like, these guys weren't necessarily, you know, fitting to do the Rock Austin, or the Rock Hogan walk around, stare at each other, take in the moment. Like, they're already like going into like Roman knuckle clutch, and you know, they're grappling on the ground, and the crowd realizes like, oh, they're getting with it with the smoke. Like, we're not going to be the ones that dictate the pace of this match. We're just gonna have to go along for the ride. And there never was
Which
that one, Yeah, I love that too. I love that they like were forced to, you know, basically, I don't know what the word is, but basically have to experience the match as opposed to like dictate the match. But they were waiting for their moment.
Well, that's like going back to almost like a bit of a barber philosophy kind of thing. You know, I think I read a quote from him where a big thing that he instilled on, you know, all of his dudes in All Japan, was that, you know, guys, a big problem of a lot of wrestlers is they wrestle like for the crowd's approval kind of thing. Like they're just trying to like, oh, here, I'll do this cool thing that you like, please like me kind of thing. Right. It's like the crowd is pulling the strings. Whereas a true wrestler, does, you know, obviously they're wrestling ultimately to please the crowd and for them to have a good experience, but they're not wrestling in such a transparent way that it's like, oh, you know, here's something cool, and or they're wrestling for the crowd's approval in that kind of manner. So I think it's something to be respected about when dudes are just like, no, we're gonna wrestle our way, and you're gonna experience it, and you know, react how we want you to react.
Right, and speaking to that, like at the halfway point of the match, they didn't do a big spot necessarily. You know, there wasn't, you know, some dive or top turnbuckle spot or a signature maneuver, but because of the body of work that had been presented literally just organically at the middle of the match, this is awesome chant broke out. And it was probably one of the in terms of like the way that you use like people, it's almost Pavlovian when people do it. It's not necessarily earned, but this one felt extremely earned, and they hadn't even gotten to the hot part of the match, which was like following that, you know what I mean? So I thought this crowd really got a special experience, you know, on that night.
Oh, for sure. And I think what you said like about organic, that's almost like the word of this match kind of thing, because it was, it's like you so much of the time have a match where the crowd's like, oh, this is a great match, we're gonna make it a great match, we're gonna do all of our fucking,
right,
this is awesome, fight forever. It's like, you know, the guys could be doing, you know, something completely different in the match, but the crowd's like decided, all right, this is the part where we do this and we get to, you know, hear our own voices kind of deal. But this was more of like, you know, it's the kind of this is awesome chant that you'd hear watching, you know, mid-2000s ROH, where it's just like, this is awesome, and I just need to exclaim it somehow because I'm so excited. You know, it's not like this, you know, what a lot of those chants has become. And I think that's really cool. But, I mean, what you were saying before too about these guys just getting out and, like, just going nose-to-nose and having this wrestling exchange to start out, it was with such like a fast pace, like just wanting to get into it as soon as possible. Even like I could tell that on the entrances, it was like none of these long drawn out entrances. It's like these dudes are just getting out of the ring as fast as they can. Bell's gone as fast as they can. Getting to the wrestling just so they can, like, I don't know, it felt to me like just so they could get as much wrestling as they possibly could in their allocated segment.
Yeah, it's funny because nowadays when you use the term work rate, people just assume we're talking about, you know, for lack of a better term, like a Ricochet or like a Will Ospreay sort of high-flying sort of match, which there's nothing wrong with that. I'm into that shit. I love flippy-do stuff.
Hmm.
But the original term wasn't intended to mean high spots. Like, that's a spot fest, that's a totally different thing. Work rate had to do with how often they were actually working within the allotted time. This match would have back then, you know, like in the 60s, 70s, been an extremely high work rate match because there was no wasted space. Like, there was always a reason for everything they were doing, and they were always struggling. There was very, very little like downtime where someone wasn't either getting grappled or put in a submission or a pin attempt or somebody getting struck. Like, those are the things that were happening throughout the entirety of the 18 minutes or whatever it was.
Absolutely. And one of my biggest pet peeves in wrestling, especially sort of more, it's like a real WWE trope, is the bit of you know, the heel having the baby face down and doing that. done that bloody ridiculous, like, walk around the ring, just like, you know, not having any physical, you know, connection or touching their opponent, just for the, you know, the guy who's selling looks like a bloody idiot, you know, because he's just there, just like sitting on the ground. And I guess it's like, so the idea, this is his moment to connect with the crowd, to get that sympathy. But like, I hate it so much. And this is the complete antithesis of that. You know, it's like every moment there was something going on, there was physical connection. There was, like, dudes, like, lobbying for the advantage. Like, there was no bit where one guy was just looking like an idiot having to sell, you know, while the other guy preens.
One quick story that's a little off topic, but you brought up, you know, when guys are intended to walk around the ring and, you know, get their heat and play up to the crowd and stuff like that. So I'm in a training class one time. And they want me to do that. Mm. And I'm like, I'm not really going to do that. So they tell me to do something along those lines. And I'm walking around and the guy's head is next to me. And I just reach over and I fucking kick him.
Good.
like I make it look like I'm walking forward, but I like step back and I kick him in the head. And I'm like, what?
That's what Kenta would have done.
Right. Yeah. I was not really a great wrestler, but I could ham up certain things. And if it popped Matt, then it was good.
Nice. Oh, speaking of Matt, again, a little sidebar here, but I was stoked to see, or wasn't stoked for Yuta's injury, unfortunately, but of all people replacing Yuta in the big CMLL Dos Leyendas tag with BCC, Matt Sydal is going to be part of that one, replacing Yuta on the BCC side.
Yeah, I knew he was going to Mexico for a while, so I knew he was already on that card, but I don't... Obviously, he's replacing him in that match. I think a lot of people think like he was added to the show now, but he was already on the show, and I think that's why he's replacing
him. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that being said, he has also been one of the best guys who can actually work lucha style and you know, bring the best out of the CMLL guys in a lot of their AEW matches thus far, so makes sense.
I'll tell you, Matt can do every style. Matt can shoot.
I am not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, Matt's pretty incredible. He can do everything. But going back to this match, one thing that I really appreciated about it was obviously both Danielson and Shibata have somewhat similar styles, but the story that they told is that they both sort of exist in each other's same wheelhouses, but specialize just a little bit more in one area. So anytime it came down to the grappling, while Shibata is, you know, a quote unquote master or, you know, a top end guy, like Danielson's the guy. Like, he's the master, and, like, he really could hang with him, but only to a certain level, and he kept getting in trouble, and ultimately, trying to grapple with him was his undoing, and why he lost the match, outright. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of it, when it came to the fighting spirit, when it came to the strikes, that's where Shibata had the edge on Danielson, and both of these guys were looking to try and prove that they weren't just better in the one area, but kept delving into the strengths of the other guy to prove to themselves that they could do it, but neither of them really could, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. And they established that quite early on. I definitely noticed that, sort of like, okay, you know, Danielson is more edging him out with the grappling, and especially working over of the arm. And then every time it more gets in a bit more separation and into your strikes, fighting spirit kind of stuff, Shibata's edging him out. I think after my rewatch of this match, I kind of liked that the term that I came up with for the match that I thought was like pretty appropriate was, it was just like a duel of wills kind of thing.
Mm.
And it, you know, I think a lot of that sort of goes into what you're saying about like wanting to, all right, I'm clearly better at this, but I want to, you know, show that I can hang with you and beat you at this thing that you're good at.
Right.
I mean, one of the great things I love about Danielson, he's done this in a few different matches recently, the Kingston one as well, but he's baiting the dude in with what the guy's familiar with baiting Shibata in with these strikes, and then, you know, using it as a way to, you know, nab that arm and you know, continue working over that. It's just that sneaky asshole Danielson I love so much.
Yeah. I had actually even drummed up a bit of controversy because we've got a Discord channel.
Which I'm intending to get on, by the way.
And if you guys are listening, join us at the Social Suplex Discord. There's a lot of really great chats and cool stuff, tons of topics that they cover. But you have a channel, and I was in there, and I was trying to get some background on this match, and I was like, what's the backstory? And, you know, people like AEW fans are so defensive outright. They think that I'm like accusatorily asking what the story is. You know, the way like a Fed-pilled fan is like, what's the story?
But I'm
like,
no, I'm assholes.
And I was like people got mad in there, and they like they're like, we don't need a story. It's two legends, you know? This is a dream match. And I was like, guys, I'm literally asking so I can review the match. I'm just getting some background info.
Oh, man, that's so funny.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's such a thing, right, where it's a double-edged sword of, you know, saying that you want a story. I don't need story, you know. To me, right. The story is what's told in-ring. To me, the story is, like, two great professional wrestlers trying to see who's the best. There's so much there. Like, the last thing I need is some sort of melodramatic bullshit where, you know, someone's had like a lover's quarrel, or someone's stolen someone's dog, or stolen someone's ring jacket, or, you know, all this bullshit. Like, at the end of the day, can it just be about what's in ring? I mean, I think that's obviously what, you know, the best of New Japan has been for a long time. And, you know, was well best of Ring of Honor back in the day. But I mean, the one thing I will say is, so I, you know, like, fuck the story, but I think there's always a place for a well-done, you know, video package, well-done kind of like back in the day, you'd have, like, Mike Tenay in TNA give her a real backstory of what's led both of these guys up to this point in you know, the match, or some sort of thing to just make it feel a little bit more special and kind of like bring the fans in to maybe have them aware of, like, all right, this might be a significant thing to watch out for in this match, or that kind of thing. Like, for example, a match that I thought was killed because they really had none of that was that Atlantis Jr. Jericho match.
That was rough.
Atlantis Jr. is like one of the best in the world, dude. Like, I've been watching him in CMLL for a while. He is like,
agreed,
absolutely amazing. And they did him dirty by, you know, they didn't even get over the significance and like making the fans know it's special, like the La Atlantida, Like, I think they said it, but they didn't even, like, show them what it was or anything like that. So I think there is a place for some well-done video packages to heighten a match. You know, like a UFC or Pride-style kind of video, I think, would have done a great job for this match, but they just kind of went in cold with it, which is probably my only complaint.
Well, you got to be careful, you know, asking for video packages, because people are going to accuse you of being Ice Cube Jr., you know? No, but what I do appreciate is that even though this match didn't have, I mean, the story, like you've said, it's self-contained. It occurred between the ropes and on the mat. But there is like a bigger feud going on between Danielson and Will Ospreay now. And they, I don't know if they had the foresight when they booked this match that this would become part of that feud, but now it ultimately is, because they're going to have a common opponent in Shibata, which we haven't seen that match yet as of the time of this recording. But it's kind of interesting how all of that stuff is sort of woven together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that Ospreay Shibata match really came left field for me. When I heard that one, I'm just like, man, just dropping dream matches left and right. But I mean, I kind of wish this had set up a kind of series between Danielson and Shibata, just because of how great it was. Like, the idea that this could be just a one and done is kind of like a bit heartbreaking for me, just because of like how great and the chemistry that these guys had and everything you said as well about like the how unlikely it was we would ever finally get this. And then, you know, sometimes those matches that you've really craved for, or like that you think would be really good, you know, there's just something where it doesn't quite work, or the chemistry isn't quite there, or something's a little off. Complete opposite in this case. Like, if anything, it was like even better than I would have thought it would be. And the other thing, I don't know if you noticed this, but this, and especially as you got through to the later stages of the match, this seemed like such a return to form for Shibata. I think a lot of his early stuff coming back from the injury, rightfully so. You could see there was certain stuff where he was, you know, I don't want to say going easy, but like there definitely wasn't stuff where he'd be going as hard as he used to. Whether that was like taking certain things or certain kind of bumps, or, you know, just being a bit more restrictive with what he was doing. And that seemed completely out the window in this match. There was so much that came back, and I was like, man, this is like the proper Shibata. Like, this is the same Shibata from that amazing Okada match, you know? Which I will say, I think that's my favorite Okada match of all time, which may be a big call, but that's officially it for me.
There's certainly a lot of people that agree with you for good reason. You know, I agree. I think that this is the best match post injury that Shibata's had. And he's had some pretty good ones, but this is,
I really like the Garcia one, by the way. I will say that.
Right. Like, he's had some good performances, but this match is the one that can safely fit in the catalog of some of those great matches that you had mentioned, you know, from earlier in his career. One thing I had heard before I watched this match was a lot of the hubbub online about the danger and, you know, the amount of crazy bumps and them, you know, you would have thought that these guys were headbutting each other and just straight murking one another. And then I watched it and I was like, you know, I kind of disagree a little bit with you, Chris. He did take some bumps. And I definitely agree in the sense where I think Shibata regained confidence, but I've seen him take more bumps in, like, say, the Orange Cassidy match than he did here. I felt like this was a lot of smoke and mirrors. Almost every kick that he took was to the neck or to the chest. Every single slap was to the chest, and he took minimal bumps, and they were mostly rolling. I thought that he was pretty safe for how hard and how intense the match was. I thought that they did an immaculate job doing a lot of smoke and mirrors there.
I mean, he definitely didn't. He wasn't out here taking Fujita soccer kicks to
right.
the head or anything like
this,
that.
This wasn't Murashima just destroying him at Orange Crush.
But I mean, I even like the slap exchange. You know, that was something that really I think brought it to that proper next level. And I can't say enough good things about like a good slap exchange in a match. Elevating a match, you know, that was probably my favorite part of those classics with like you know, Loki at Kenta back in the day, and a lot of, I mean, the Okada match with Shibata, I think the you know, slaps were, you know, more coming from Shibata, were probably the best part of that. But maybe if I rewatch it, I was watching carefully, it might be come out a bit more that the ones that he's taken from Danielson are more to the neck and shoulder area than to the face. But still, there was a bit of that where I was like, man, that's toying a bit more with the brain injury than he had than or what I'd seen him do in the past, I guess.
Right. The other thing I was really wondering, for me, that moment where they were doing the slap exchange was probably the most gift and moment that people were pointing out and talking about. And I thought it was interesting that you didn't choose for that to be the art moment as opposed to the sequence in the turnbuckle instead.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely a few where I took various reference pictures. Another one. So there was a bit with the slap exchange, obviously from the you know, both of them sitting down face to face, being a great like intense moment. And sometimes I think about with this kind of stuff too. I'm like, there's a lot of things where that would be the most obvious thing to kind of go with, so I don't want it to be the most obvious. And I had seen some other really talented artists do like a bit, at least the you know, sitting down cross-legged face-to-face kind of like stare off bit. There was a bit that I thought was a really cool visual where Danielson first sits down and really like challenges Shibata, and Shibata's there with the you know, cross arms, looking off to the crowd like, is this motherfucker serious kind of thing. And I was like, that was actually a pretty cool moment that I almost went with for it. Another one was the octopus hold when he that was such a cool visual. But what won over the him and being in the corner, you know, leading up to that big, awesome, you know, Kenta running basement dropkick, was right before that. So obviously I think the part after it was awesome with that great running dropkick and the, you know, I just love the way he hits that. But before that, getting into it, I don't know if you caught his little ode tribute to Tenryu.
Yeah, he did the punch and then the chop and then the punch.
Yeah, that I think made me real happy. I mean, such a Tenryu fan, man.
And a lot of guys, when they do that punch nowadays, like they do like a kind of bow and arrow cocked version of it. But he did the straight up like, boom, laser sharp straight punch to the jaw. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, like that
jab. That's so stiff.
I think Tenryu would be proud of that one. But yeah, I think that, and then also, like, I didn't actually know which one I was going to draw when I was, like, sitting down and, you know, was looking, and I was like, man, what, this is such a hard choice. And then sometimes it's also, like, the sort of dimension element of the visual, because I think as cool, and sometimes you go with it just because it's, you know, it's a important moment of the match or whatever kind of thing. But sometimes certain layouts can be a bit flat, like if guys are just, you know, horizontal to one another kind of thing. So I'm trying lately to try to do stuff where it has a bit more interesting kind of dimension element to it. And that shot where the cameraman was kind of like down lower and looking up and you know, see Danielson sort of more from behind, and Shibata, like, there's just something so uniquely Shibata about those forearms into the downed opponent in the corner, where it's like, I haven't seen anyone do it quite like him. And that's something too, I think, trying to capture a certain essence of dudes in this match, that's sort of an important thing to me. So I think
sure.
In a long-winded way, that's the reason why I chose that one.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I was wondering, I was like, man, I wonder why he didn't do the most obvious thing you could do. But, you know, if there's other content creators doing that, I still think the picture is awesome. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of your art anyways, but it's always interesting to kind of get in your mind and figure out what it is that's, you know, motivating the decisions.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Ultimately, though, I mean, the match, both of these guys hit some of their big finishers and kicked it out. You had the Baisaku knee and the bitch maker and the bitch maker slap, and then both guys got their major.
And you hit that with such force, man. Like the sweat flying, the sound off of that, like the pop of it all.
Oh, that could have been, man, a moment too if the camera was right.
That's such a funny thing. Like, there's some moments where you're like, that would have been perfect if the camera was just a little bit over here.
And then both guys got their major submissions on one another, but ultimately what finished the match is you know, Danielson's going for the label lock again, and Shibata turns it into a pinning predicament, and you're like, oh my god, he got out of it, he might win. And then Danielson turns that into his own cradle and, you know, basically gets seat belts it and gets the 1-2-3, and it's like, oh my he's incredible. This match just fucking rocks.
Dude, absolutely. Preacher to the choir. I mean, even before that, like, I was so happy to see Shibata break out. And I haven't watched all of, like, his sort of, like, ROH, you know, the tapings that they've been doing of all of his stuff in the last, like, 6 months. But seeing him break out, like, the STO and the Death Valley Driver, like, that is what really kind of brought me back to, like, Big Math Lad Shibata.
Mm-hmm.
And then, man, that there's a great bit, like, when we were sort of more in the slaps part that I loved, where Danielson hit, like, went to hit a PK on Shibata, and then the back roll through, and then that massive, awesome, wild Inoki kick that he hit, like, in response. Yep. Such a cool moment. But then, yeah, as we got to that end part, and there was a few different, you know, roll-ups. Like, it was a great sort of, like, sequence, but what I really liked about it was all with intent. And it was every one of them was, like, really gave me the impression that it was with, like, full of desperation and like really trying to get that win with everything, rather than a lot of these kind of, like, roll up sequences that we see at ends of matches, or, you know, matches that are trying to be a, you know, quote unquote work rate match, as you're saying, of where you see these, like, elongated, you know, roll up sequences of the one, two, one, two, one, you know, and it's like so, like the opposite of looking like they're actually trying to win, just like, all right,
there's
this
no
is
authenticity.
The part. Yeah, exactly. This felt so much more authentic with it. It didn't go too long. And then, more importantly than anything, it was Danielson actually, you know, catching Shibata in one of them for the win, in a way. And that whole thing, reminded me a lot of, like, you know, I got a lot of love for Billy Robinson, and it reminded me a lot of that kind of, like, Billy Robinson sort of match finish sequence kind of deal. So I just,
well, you know what they say, catch as catch can.
Exactly. Any one of those can catch a dude, and there you go. But, man, I just adored this match. It made me very excited for Shibata into the future, and whether was this more of, like, a one-off, like, this Danielson match was, like, real important for him, so he turned it up a bit more than he would generally be doing on a day-to-day basis, or whether this is more of a return to form.
You know, I think it's probably a bit turned up. and, you know, rising to the occasion. I guess we'll have to kind of wait and see if he's able to continue to do that. But, you know, I think with his health condition is still, like, you know, tenuous as to how often he'll wrestle. And, you know, I think that I think utilizing him as an attraction is a better route to go.
Absolutely. I think if we can, you know, have a great Shibata match like once a month or once every, you know, how often, it'd be far more effective than him just being a every show kind of guy.
Right.
But I guess the biggest, you know, test we're going to see is he's coming back off this one against bloody Ospreay. So another one where I think there'll be massive expectations.
Yeah. With the amount of head strike offense that Ospreay has, I'm a little, I don't want to be like, you know, safety police here, but I am a little nervous just in general. I'm sure it'll be fine. But then there's also Okada's kind of waiting in the wings, and you sort of have to imagine that they're probably going to do that. They're already starting to somewhat tease it a little bit, I feel like. And there's a lot to live up to when it comes to that match in general, you know?
So that being Shibata and Okada or Ospreay Okada?
Yeah. No, Shibata and Okada. They've had, like, little breadcrumbs thrown out there already. Right.
Man. You know, I only watched that Okada-Shibata match. Finally watched it for the first time last night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
So I think when it initially happened, I was honestly a bit like, you know, a bit PTSD over, you know, everything with the concussion stuff. And then I was like a bit bummed out thinking that, you know, Shibata could like die, you know?
Right.
And then for a long time of being like, well, that was like the end of his career. Do I want to watch like the last match of his career kind of thing? So that was a little bit like hard to kind of bring myself to watch. And then it was honestly just one of those things where everything, once he came back, I was meaning to like finally watch it and just never had, you know, a thing that pushed me to. And I was like, you know what? This is the time. Let's finally do it. And man, I adored it so, so much. I hope, you know, if you're saying they're leading up to a possible rematch between Okada and Shibata in AEW, man, I hope they make that feel as special as it should.
For me, I always liken that match. Obviously, Shibata's the one that came out the worst for wear, but I don't know. But in kayfabe, the real test was, to a certain extent, for Okada. I don't know if you remember, but Mind Games, when Mankind wrestled Shawn Michaels, to me, that was always like Shawn Michaels' real man match to like see if he really could stand the test of like someone that with that style. To me, that's always what the Shibata match was.
Funnily enough, I only watched that match this week as well. The Mind Games.
Oh, wow.
For a upcoming commission piece that I'm doing for someone.
Yeah, those are like real man matches where you've got like a pretty boy champion trying to see if they can live up to this killer, you know?
Yeah, a lot of similarities there for sure. Because I think, in that one, it was obviously, Mankind bringing something else out of Sean at that point. And then this one was really Shibata, you know, forcing Okada to get away from. I think probably my biggest criticism of Okada is sometimes he can be a bit like a bit of a video game kind of wrestler rather than like a reactive kind of, you know, wrestler. More along the lines of like a Billy Robinson or an Inoki or a Danielson or Shibata kind of thing. So he really sort of forced him to actually wrestle a lot more than Okada generally has to, or at least at that time kind of was used to. But I think that is probably a lot of the reason why, you know, I was saying I think that is my favorite Okada match I've ever seen.
There is something I wanted to tell you about. I don't want to send you too much back down a rabbit hole that you've already been down, but have you seen Sting versus the Guardian versus Vader?
I have not.
Okay.
The Guardian being Bubba, Big Boss Man?
Yeah. Yeah, Guardian Angel. So it's not a three-way match. It's weird. It's before they ever did triple threat matches in WCW. So they came up with a proto version of it called the Triangle Elimination Match. Trust me when I tell you, you need to go track that one down. It's probably like the last really great Vader Sting match.
Damn. Okay. Officially added to my list. Dang.
Now the Guardian Angel, as great as Boss Man is, that whole sequence brings the quality of the match just a little bit down, and the finish isn't the cleanest thing in the world. But in terms of the action between Sting and Vader, I think it's the best in-ring action they ever had. I think it's better than the 92 Iron or King of Cable match.
Whoa, big call. Damn.
Yeah.
That's, that Great American Bash match as well, to me,
that's so stiff.
Adored it so much. And then obviously, yeah, the strap match,
he's bleeding his back.
Yeah, so good. But if you're saying this is the, you all stands up with those, hot damn, I will definitely be watching.
I think
that.
So. You might disagree. We'll have to see, but yeah.
Hey, for sure. I mean, that's what makes these things worth watching. See whether we line up or end up on different sides of the coin.
Well, I am going to have to hop off here, but before I go, there was a challenge that was laid out to you. I don't know if you saw it. It was on the Discord channel, but I think we need to make it official. And maybe not too soon, but down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Artist versus artist. We pick a match. So you pick the match, and then you tell me what it's going to be ahead of time. And we both do an art piece on it and then present it on the show.
Okay. I was so excited when I saw this. I love this idea so darn much. And I'm way keen. I'm picking up that challenge, young boy. I will face you head to head. Illustration to illustration.
There can only be one. No, it's not a contest because I can't go match for match with you. But you know, listening to this show, having all these great curated artists on, it's a bit inspiring. And I think that I've got a bit of artistic bone. I used to draw a lot growing up, and it might be fun and maybe inspire other people to want to do something similar to this, and kind of create a bit of a more of a community around the show than you already have.
Dude, that would be amazing. That's all I have, or the most I've ever wanted to do out of doing this show, is to sort of like creatively inspire people to want to do stuff. I was so stoked on that interview that I did with Petey the other week, and his like infectious like just creative spirit and wanting to just do stuff that he wants to do, just for the fun of it. That made me want to, get back and create more stuff. So if whatever we can do, I think to help, bring that out in others, that's all I'm looking to do here. So I think that's a tremendous idea. And I'd be super stoked for it. And I'm going to have a lot of fun picking a match that I feel will be an appropriate one for the both of us. Might make the first official shoot style entrant into the canon of the matches of the week.
Okay, that's fine. Just don't do Maeda versus Sayama. or if you do, not the last one, not the nut kick match, not that one.
Yeah, that's not on my holy grail of shoot style matches. Maybe something more along the lines of some Futen.
Oh, I've watched a little bit of Futen, but modern shoot style, I haven't watched too much of that stuff, to be honest. So yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see. All right. We'll definitely lock that in for a future time. I'll be in touch for when that looks to be coming out. But in closing out this show, I'd like to thank you so much for coming on, dude. I had a great time as always. Any plug skis for you there?
Yeah. Again, I guess I should have mentioned it earlier. I am one half and co-host of Keeping It Strong Style, which is a New Japan weekly episodic podcast on this network and channel, Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can catch us. We drop every Tuesday, and we cover everything. You know, we do all match reviews and previews and cover the news and rumors and answer listeners' questions and everything. And it's usually 2 to 3 hours running the gamut weekly. And in my opinion, the best New Japan podcast that's out there on the internet. So check us out. And then aside from that, you know, follow the network. We have tons of great shows, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, One Nation Radio, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, and the WWE show with Imp. So we've got a little bit of something for everybody that's out there. And you can join us on Twitter or X. We're at KI Strong Style. And we're on Reddit. We're pretty much everywhere. And then we got the Discord channel going, and that's Social Suplex. And we've got literally discussion posts for everything. If, whatever you're into, whether it's wrestling or even other outside interests, there's a channel for you. And there's a lot of great discourse on there and not too many assholes. So
I like that. Dude, your plugs put me to shame. I've got to up my game here.
Great stuff. Yeah, you're like, I think we got an All Things. I think we got an AEW.
That's just One Nation Radio.
You're like, there's One Nation Radio. There's Keeping It Strong Style. I think there's an AEW podcast. Lots of great shows.
There may be a WWE one.
It might be a WWE. Here's the thing about Imp. If you guys have never listened to that show, he covers everything in the world of WWE in 30 minutes or less. It is incredible because you're not a fan of it, yeah, it's like, and he's getting the same ad revenue as the rest of us who are doing 3 hours because he's getting the same amount of people to do the ads and listen to them as we are in our 3 hours. Like, an incredible worker.
Smart dude, working hard, working smart, not hard.
Yeah.
I respect that. But yeah, totally everyone, I highly recommend Keeping It Strong Style. You guys' commitment to watching all of the New Japan, you know, not just the good bits, and like,
oh, trust me, with House of Torture, it's been tough.
Oh my gosh, I respect your sacrifice when it comes to that. But you know, the long form shit, I respect it so much. And honestly, I think, and you know, we're shutting this out, so this isn't creating a whole nother thing. But like, it's just such an interesting time in New Japan. To where I think this is such a good time for people to be, you know, talking about it and what the way forward is, what's next. You know, obviously there's some stuff in New Japan that's not quite perfect right now, but I think that makes it all the more interesting in the fact that we can't exactly see what the future looks like necessarily. So yeah, I think this is one of the most interesting times to be keeping up with that New Japan product. So check it out, guys.
If you want to know what the future is, listen to Keeping It Strong Style. We're basically Nostradamus. So, but yeah, no, you know, they've got that Chicago show coming up too, and we are going to be there covering it with press credentials. So, you know, if you're listening and you're going to be in the Chicago area for Windy City Riot, let us know. We'll grab a drink. I think we're going to do some sort of meet greet sort of thing. So, you know, hit us up.
That sounds awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, dude. I really appreciate your time. I'll let you get over to, it's about dinner time there for you, isn't it?
I already ate, but gonna do some things with my time that's not talking about wrestling art.
Sounds lovely. Does your lady hate wrestling as much as mine does?
Oh, no. My girlfriend does not love wrestling as much as I do. But one of the reasons we're together is she loves wrestling. Aww. And she's beautiful and gorgeous. But, you know, I lucked out there.
So sweet. All right, dude. Well, you get over to that. And thank you so much again. And I look forward to this challenge.
Thanks, man. I look forward to it, too. Talk to you later.
See you later, dude. Bye. Well, wasn't that just very, very fun? I had a blast, in case you didn't know. But man, I am so happy to have Josh on the show. And honestly, I'm actually quite pumped about this idea that he had about us both getting to do, you know, the wrestling art match of the week kind of illustration. It's good to see two different takes of the things. And like I said, honestly, I'm just so stoked that this thing can make other people, you know, want to create art of their own. If this can inspire you guys in some way, I think that is fantastic. And I want to do as much things as we can to continue that happening. So I have a little bit of an idea of something in mind that I think I'm going to announce in a little bit. That's hopefully going to be a fun way for us all to be making wrestling art together. All right, well, hopefully that's wet your whistle a little bit and get you wondering what that could be. Got to be a little bit mysterious sometimes. Don't give it all away at once. But I just want to say a big thank you to you guys for listening, as always, for supporting, for, you know, checking out my art, for, you know, potentially financially supporting if you're in a position to do so, for making a purchase of, you know, buying prints, for, you know, commissioning stuff. Hey, if you have a rad idea of your own, if you have your own favorite match of the week that you would like to see in art form, if you have a dog that you'd like to see in a Mexican wrestling mask, well, heck, send me a message. We can bring that into reality. I love doing that kind of stuff. I think that's really the coolest part about this art stuff. We can make the weirdest and wildest of ideas come to life. I also want to say a big thank you to the network, to Social Suplex. You know, I'm not going to be able to touch how well Josh put that over in terms of a plug already, but socialsuplex.com, in addition to keeping the lights on for this podcast, they also have a whole gaggle of other rad podcasts, as Josh mentioned. So please, if you're in the mood for more wrestling audio content, if you want to hear some things about New Japan, you know, AEW, WWE, whatever the Tunnel Talk one is, I'm not quite sure, but it seems interesting or intriguing. this is why I leave the plugs in, Josh. It's Social Suplex. I think that brings us to the end of this episode. I am very excited about our next episode, and I'm very excited about our future curator episodes. I've got some more things in mind. All right, guys, well, thank you, and I will see you next week. Bye.
I do the hammer lock.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.